session number 10657, reel 31.
I think you were saying that the landing craft was actually able to suppress the strong points.
Yes, I think that was what it was. that's what its task was, and I think it, although it hadn't in fact dealt, or it couldn't in fact deal with some of the field guns up at the back of the beaches that were still causing a bit of trouble on the actual beaches. So I think the rockets were probably directed at the few strong points that the assault battalions hadn't dealt with.
Could you actually identify these strong points? Could you sort of see them, pick them out?
No, I don't. I don't think we didn't worry very much about that, actually, because they'd been, you know, so far as we knew, they'd been dealt with. We were actually much more interested in having a look at why we'd got to climb, because through the binoculars we could actually see the farmhouse on the top of the hill that we'd got to go past, and also the track and various other things. So we were really extending ourselves beyond the beaches. That was all over and done with, and we were looking up. So I can't recollect whether I actually spotted any pillboxes or anything. As we were going in, quite a few LCAs were going back, and they gave us the thumbs up signal as they went by. And as I was saying, we were able to study the island through binoculars and compare the layout with the aerial photos. For instance, we could see the farmhouse on the top of the hill, we could see the track that A and B Company had to reach, and the suspected machine gun position. We'd been told that there was an MG position. But the sun had come up and the whole thing was deceptively peaceful. Well, it was for a minute or two, because three Messerschmitts came low over the beaches and shot up several LCIs. And I must say that our naval ACAT gunner in the bows was very quick to react, and he opened up and loosed off at them. They didn't cause any casualties on our LCI, and almost immediately they'd started their run. The Spitz had peeled off from above and came screeching down after the Messerschmitts, and the Messerschmitts came down a sort of almost to sea level and then shot up over the cliffs and back towards the Catania airfields, because that's where they'd come from. We knew that in a few minutes our LCI would beach, so the watertight doors were opened and the naval ratings started these winches that would push the twin gangways beyond the bows of the LCI and steeply down onto the beach. My company signaller shouted that the 6th Battalion had captured all their objectives. This good news was passed on to the troops below, and we had in fact been told to land on Jig Green Beach if it were possible. But during the night our LCI had, like so many other craft, strayed off course, and we were called in by a beach master on how Amber, which was a 5-div beach, we were too far north, about 3,000 yards from Jig Green, which is very nearly 2 miles. And as we've seen, this was by no means an isolated incident. Now, one of these field guns inland was shelling some of the craft on how Amber Beach quite accurately. They were already unloading. A cruiser and a couple of destroyers took up the challenge, and they fired, but they didn't get the field gun, and almost immediately after that a direct hit was scored on an LCI which was already beached. The watertight doors at the back were open, and it looked to us as though the shell had actually gone down and exploded inside. And you just got this smoke curling out of the aft troop hatch, at which our naval lieutenant decided that he didn't think we ought to go in on that beach at all. So Hugh Blackton, who was the second in command, virtually took over and said, look, if you won't take this craft in, I'll ruddy well take it in. And we went in on the beach to the left of where this LCI had started to burn. And then, of course, we had a false beach. We were about 30 yards from the shore. The gun was still firing. We were really sitting targets, and the only thing to do was to get off the LCI and wade ashore. So I took B Company down the left-hand gangplank. Chris took A Company down the right, and we went into something like 6 or 7 feet of water. The life jackets took the weight. We started to paddle desperately towards the shore.
Doing the doggy paddle.
More or less. That's right, yes. But the naval ratings, who could see the predicament we were in, bless them, they waded out with great big boat hooks and hooked the boat hooks in our webbing, and literally yanked us in to the beaches.
That must have been very difficult to manoeuvre if you were wearing a life jacket.
It was. You're like a Michelin man floating around, you know. It wasn't easy at all. I mean, I say 6 or 7 feet of water. I think very soon, it wasn't right the way in like that. It was just where we'd actually beached at that particular point. So you were soon able to stand on your own feet. But even then, you were sort of going in like this with your hands held up to keep the Tommy gun dry, and almost ballooning along in the water. Must have been quite a sight, actually. But we got them all in, and I mean, we were all, of course, absolutely soaking wet. And we landed soaked to the skin. And it really wasn't, it was never like that at Cabrit. We didn't actually visualise that we'd ever be doing a wet landing of that sort. Anyway, the Navy, of course, were controlling the beaches. That is to say, everything that was brought in and everything that went out. And there was a naval beachmaster with a loud hailer, and he was shouting, come along, Durhams. That guy's been trying to hit something for an hour now. He's no bloody good. So as we went by, one of my runners said, well, that last one wasn't too bloody bad, he growled. And he was my company runner, actually, as we passed the naval bloke. Anyway, we staggered along the beach because our equipment was heavy enough, but being waterlogged as well, we could literally hardly move. The sun was coming up by now, it wasn't too long before we dried out. But in those first few minutes on that beach, if we'd had to fight a battle, we'd have been in a very bad situation, I think.
Was the beach under fire, apart from this?
No, it was only these odd shells that were dropping in the vicinity of the landing craft. And as we were going to the left, we got further and further away from the one that had been hit. It wasn't hit again, not while we were there, but what was coming down on those beaches was shell fire from field guns back beyond the beaches, being used in a coast defence battery role. We turned left into a minefield gap. We were filmed again, as we had been before supercharge, which infuriated us, because we resented the fact that a camera operator or a film man or whatever had arrived in Europe before we had. Anyway, the loud hailer chap wouldn't let us alone. He said, through the minefield gap to the main road and turn right for the assembly area. So we went through the gap. We got to the main road, and as we went along, the sun was sort of slanting down through the orange groves, and it all looked very pleasant indeed. The houses along the road were shuttered and silent. There was not a sign of any civilians. There were a few ITAG prisoners on the way back to the beaches to be evacuated, most of them without any guards of any sort. And just to cap it all, there was a British military policeman wearing a soft-peaked red military policeman's hat, more or less directing the walking traffic, and it was he who directed us to the A&B companies, to the assembly area, where we were able to rest for a little while, dry ourselves out, smoke a cigarette, and in fact have breakfast as well, if I remember rightly, before we had to move on to the covering position.
You mentioned the minefield. Did you come across any wire or anything else in the way?
Yes, you could see that there was. We actually went through a minefield gap. So, obviously, the 6th and 9th battalions, or somebody who'd gone ashore with the assault waves, had marked that, or their REs had marked it. But this was a little gap leading from the beach up to the main road. It's probably a single strand of wire or something along it, you know. But there were minefield gaps off of that beach. I mean, very soon after that, of course, or very soon after it, but not too long afterwards, the beach brick would have moved in, 34th beach brick, which was attached to 151, and they would have started getting all the heavy stuff, getting the bulldozers to make the gap, getting the heavy stuff off the beach. But all that, of course, went on after we disappeared from the scene.
You didn't spot any permanent defence works or anything like that as you were getting off the beach?
No, I didn't see any. Well, there were supposed to be pillboxes and entrenchments, but we didn't actually. There was nothing there that looked like a heavily defended locality. In fact, there is no way you could say that in our sector it was a rough landing. Casualties were very, very light indeed. It was the Americans who copped it round at Gila. They really did. They had the full weight of the Italian and German armour thrown at them. And I think I'm right in saying they didn't have their anti-tank guns at one stage. And they had, I mean, had the Germans got down there a bit quicker, I think there's quite a possibility that the 7th Army might have been pushed back into the sea from what was happening at the time.
Effectively, your landing was unopposed, wasn't it?
Really, it was
by the time you got
a dead easy
got
one.
There.
Absolutely, dead easy. We didn't have any. I think we lost one man from drowning, actually, and I think that was coming in from the LCI. One. I know we didn't lose anybody going from the Rice to the RCI, but we did lose one man from drowning coming in. Really, from here onwards, not a great deal happened until we became involved and heavily involved at Primosole. That was the biggest battle of the Sicilian campaign, I think, in fact.
So you got to your assembly area and had breakfast. Presumably this was a cold breakfast from your mess tin rations.
Well, it was part of these 48-hour rations that they'd given us. I think they were sort of compo ration things. And I know that everybody was absolutely... It was a hilarious situation, because when we opened up one tin, they got Christmas pudding in it. So somebody had got their logistics absolutely wrong. So there we were sitting, you know, with the sun up, dawn having not long broken, in a sort of surrounded by orange trees and goodness knows what else, drying ourselves off and eating great chunks of Christmas pudding on a July morning.
Did you manage to make a brew? Because I know you weren't allowed petrol for fire.
Not at that stage, we didn't know. No. We didn't have very long, actually, because Bob wanted us to get on the move up to that covering position just as soon as possible. So we didn't actually... I'm sorry, I've misled you. That assembly area the military policeman sent us to wasn't the assembly area that we started off from to climb the hill. I think where he sent us to, we just gathered ourselves together there.
And then you went on to the...
Then I think we went on to the assembly area.
At the bottom
where
of the
we would, yes, where we'd have... Well, further along the road towards Lido di Vola, where we would have had our orders from Bob Lidwell. That's about it, I think.
When you were climbing the hill, did you see any or hear any sign of the enemy?
No. We didn't. Yes, I think so. We didn't come across any enemy, actually, on the climb. What we did come across was a cave full of civilians, leading platoon reported back to me that there was this cave full of civilians. So I went up, and the platoon commander and I went in there, and it was absolutely jam solid with men, women and children. Most of them were crying or wailing, and two or three people came rushing over to us and tugged away at us and said, "You're not going to shoot us, are you?" And we didn't have an interpreter with us or anything like that, but I think they had somebody who could understand a little English, and we said, "Of course we're not going to shoot you. You know, what makes you think we're going to shoot you?" Or words to that effect. And they said, "Well, we've been told by the Germans that as soon as you land on Sicily, you will shoot all civilians." I said, "Well, that's absolute nonsense. We're not going to shoot you." At which point, all the civilians streamed out of the cave, flung their arms round the necks of B Company, who were by then sitting down and taking it easy, and were sort of treating them as long-lost brothers almost. We became very popular in about 10 seconds when we explained that we weren't going to shoot them. But that was the only incident we actually had going up during the climb.
Was this climb being done in tactical order?
No. It was purely and simply that, I mean, there was a bit of hill to go up. There was no way you could avoid going over the terraces, because it was all terraces. So we simply spread out. We didn't go in single file or anything, but we spread out and just went up. Well, I say that we would obviously have put a leading platoon with a point section ahead of us a bit. We didn't actually go up there blind, you know. So we would have done the thing properly and had a leading platoon out in front. But after that, well, then the other two platoons would have followed, spread out in probably a long line from left and right, from company headquarters, extending on either side.
Going up abreast.
Yes, that's right.
But did you have two companies abreast going up the hill, or did the whole...
No, because they were going in a slightly different direction. It was, I mean, I don't know how they got on, but I do know that what we had to climb over. But I don't think A Company were near us. They were actually going off at a tangent from us, I think. They may have had an easier climb.
To another bit of high ground.
Yes, they had another bit of high ground. They had to get astride the road leading from Noto down to Avola, I think it was. And we simply had to occupy a covering position.
What happened then when you get to the top of the hill?
Well, that really all comes in the next bit, actually. I haven't done a lot of work on that one yet, but
did you dig in when you reached the...
Well, when we got up, the first thing that happened when we got up the top of the hill was that these Messerschmitts came over us, having just strafed the beaches, and we were so completely flaked out, the whole company, that we hadn't got the energy to even fire at them. So they really literally got away with it, because we could have hit them with the rifles and the Tommy guns almost. They were so low. You could see the pilots sort of looking out of their, you know, out through the perspex. Quite a lot of... I mean, we did lose two carriers, actually. They went out on a patrol towards Palazzolo Acredi. They were battalion carriers, but they were ambushed, so we weren't all that far away from enemy forces, if you like, you know. They were in the vicinity, so we had to be careful.
Did you have a good view from the...
Oh, marvellous. You could see down over the ships lying down there, everything. Had a super view from where we were. It was really quite... quite... quite a pretty picture almost, you know. They were all down there below the, off the beaches and that. Hello, it was quite a sight.
What about the view inland?
It was, well, we were more or less on the highest ground, I think, actually. And it was fairly flat, I think, round about where we were. But what it was like further over towards the centre of the island, I don't remember.
But you could see a good long way from
inland. I think so. You could, yes, you could see quite a while. Quite a way, I think. Okay, right, well, we're going to start off now ashore on Sicily and in the assembly area, which was in some orchards just off the coast road. There was the odd burst of machine gun fire, but other than that, it looked as though it was going to be a nice, quiet Sunday morning. The troops immediately dried out their equipment. They emptied the water out of their boots. And I think I mentioned earlier on that when they opened their rations, they found to their disgust that there was Christmas pudding for breakfast. Whilst we were in the assembly area, an old friend of mine who actually got me to join the Queen's Royal Regiment as a territorial before the war went by with his Beaufort's guns and shouted across to me. I'd last seen him when we did the large map map table demonstration just before Sicily, where we discussed where we were going to land. Anyway, just before 8 o'clock on this Sunday morning, there was a CO's conference at battalion headquarters. He told us that the 6th and 9th battalions had taken their objectives with very few casualties. I didn't mention that it had been a complete and utter fiasco in parts. And the immediate task of our battalion and A and B Company, well, rather, the immediate task of our battalion was for A and B Company to capture a covering position northwest of the town of Avola, the coastal town of Avola, and for C and D to capture the high ground east of Noto, commanding the road approaches to Avola. So that was committing the whole battalion. The CO went on to say that there hadn't been a great deal of opposition on the beaches, not even with the assault battalions. So far, we'd only been involved with Italians. The Germans were still to be reckoned with, and it was absolutely vital that we got to the covering position, that is to say, all four companies got to their covering position before they did. I asked about the machine gun on the track, which was supposed to be there, and the CO told me it had already been dealt with by the American paratroopers. He warned us that we had to watch out for civilian snipers, that the 6th Battalion had had a certain amount of trouble with them, and finished by telling us to get cracking right away.
Did you in fact ever get shot at by civilians?
No, not at all, no. The 6th Battalion were, apparently, but we weren't. Well, certainly within 10 minutes, about 9 o'clock in the morning, we moved out of the assembly area, trudged through the minefield gap, and saw a group of Italians coming towards us. They didn't appear to have a guard. One of them was carrying a rifle. They were all unshaven, very demoralised, and delighted to be going into activity. But when they got level with us, my runner snatched the rifle from the man who was holding it and threw it over a low wall. The immediate response was for the owner of the rifle to say, buddy, what the hell do you think you're doing? He was, in fact, an American paratrooper who'd been landed well away from his own unit and was escorting the Italians down to the beach. So we all had a good laugh standing in the gap there, but the rifle, of course, was over the wall and just in the minefield. So we had to very carefully get it out for him, by which time, of course, the Italians were also highly amused. So it was quite a an isolated incident, it eased the tension to a certain extent. We turned left towards the town of Evola, and about 100 yards along the road a couple of Shermans rumbled by, so we knew we'd got some tanks ashore. We passed a company of the 5th Division going in the opposite direction. They had also been landed in the wrong divisional area. They, in fact, had been landed where 50 div troops should have been, and we'd been landed where 5 div troops should have been. One of them shouted out as they went by, landed in the wrong div area, where is this perishing battle anyway? Well, by now, everything was absolutely quiet. There was no machine gun fire. The guns that had been firing on the beaches had stopped, and there was no one around at all. We did pause to think as to what would have been the situation if, with troops being landed on the wrong beaches, lots of landing craft lost, gliders dropped in the sea. It could have been a pretty disastrous situation if the coast had been held in strength by the Germans and not by the Italians, most of whom anyway appeared to be inland from the coast. Little while after that, we passed a field ambulance location just off the main road. It looked a bit like a village hall in any sort of English village, but there were a dozen or so stretchers lined up outside with blankets covering the bodies, and I remember as we went by, we sort of glanced over at them. There was no knowing whether they were friend or foe, and the thought goes through your mind as to whether any of your friends are in fact laying there under the blankets. It was a rather sobering thought. Realised that although there hadn't been a lot of casualties, there was there was a certain amount of fighting had been going on. Very soon after this, the battalion split up. D Company went off towards Evola and Noto, and I took advance guard with B, and together with A and battalion headquarters, we started to climb the lower slopes of the hill towards a covering position. The going was very tough indeed. The hill was very much steeper than on the scale models, or as it had appeared on the photographs from the air reconnaissance. We were carrying our full scale of invasion equipment, and the trouble was that every yard of the hillside had been ploughed up, and the plough was divided at 30 or 40 yard intervals by 4 foot high brick walls. In other words, the whole hillside, for practically the whole climb, was a succession of terraces. Each one had to be clambered over before you did the next bit. The chaps who really had it really rough were the signallers. They'd got these heavy 18 sets strapped on their backs, and they were bent almost double. What we had to do when we got to the 4 foot high walls, the signallers sort of leaned over, we put our hands under the packs holding the 18 sets and literally levered them over the walls. We had to stop quite frequently so that they could keep up, and I think everybody then began to realise that the PT at Suez and on the ships had not been a waste of time. After a couple of hours, we came across a cave full of civilians. There were old men and women, there were young girls, there were women with babies cradled in their arms. My leading platoon found them, and I went forward to investigate, and 5 of us went in to the cave. 4 of us, in fact, had got Tommy guns. And of course, immediately the women burst out crying, and this set the children off, and a man of about 50 who spoke a little English came over and spoke to me, and he said something like, "For God's sake, don't shoot us. I was in London before the war, and I remember how kind you were." So I said to him, "What makes you think we shall shoot you?" And his reply was, "The fascists told us that if ever British landed on Sicily, they would kill all the civilians. So we came up here to hide. You could have heard a pin drop then. The crying and the wailing stopped because the rest of the people in the cave were waiting to see what I was going to say. And I simply said, "Don't worry, we're not going to shoot you." And of course, there was immediate pandemonium, and everybody burst out of the cave and mobbed the leading platoon of B Company, including some quite attractive civilian girls. So, of course, the troops thought that was a nice diversion as well.
Was this the first time that they'd had that sort of welcome?
The troops, yes. On Sicily, yes.
Yeah.
We hadn't seen any up to then. We hadn't actually seen any... I don't remember seeing any... Oh, no, not at that time. By the time we got onto the beaches until we got the covering position, these were the only civilians we'd seen.
But was it the first time you'd had that sort of...
Oh, yes, we didn't get that in North Africa anywhere. Nothing like that. I mean, they really streamed out of the cave and just mobbed everybody. It was quite remarkable, really. By now, of course, the sun was beating down, and it took us altogether 6 hours to climb the